UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Time now for The Drive with Mark Ennis, presented by The Fitness Market on 93.9 The Ville. The Fitness Market is Louisville's premier location for home and commercial fitness equipment and electric bikes. Find them online at thefitnessmarket.com. Now here's Mark Ennis and Luke Hancock.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Luke Hancock, on a Wednesday, grinding through yet another week of the quarantine life. Luke, we have at least made it out of March, which I think you would agree sucked and lasted forever.
Yeah, and it gives us hope that we're going to have a little bit better April, right?
I hope. I can't imagine how it'll be worse, Luke.
This is true. Yeah, I'm ready to turn a corner. I'm ready for some warm weather. The only bad thing is, like, we're starting to pass some dates or get close to some dates where some very exciting things are supposed to be going on. You know, this time of year, when you go from college basketball to the Masters to the Derby, it's the best time of the year. I certainly am going to feel differently with none of those things.
Not a one of them. And I guess Wimbledon going to be canceled as well.
Yep.
As we all just sort of work through this, it is the right thing. It's a responsible thing. And we are trying to make the most of it. And a guy who at least got some good news out of all of this today. He is the head women's basketball coach at Louisville. He's Jeff Walls. Jeff, what board game have you played the most so far?
Well, we've actually been playing a bunch of the board game Sorry as of late.
That's a classic right there.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. We have had some good times and, just trying to stay as busy and as occupied as we can.
Luke, what's the board game for you guys? You and the wife play board games?
We're more cards games. Okay. We haven't played board games in a long time. Like, we'll play Monopoly, I guess, every once in a while.
That's fair enough.
What about you, Ennis?
Card games for us, too, all the way. And, of course, we have, like, a dumbed-down Monopoly version for little kids, too, because all mine are young like yours, Jeff. So we do our very best.
I want to know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to know, are these kids just losing their minds right now? Are they, what do you guys let them do? Are they getting out of the house? Or are they just watching Netflix all day?
How about you, Jeff?
We have actually not watched a bunch of TV. We're very fortunate to have two kids that have great, great imaginations, can actually entertain themselves for hours. As we're just getting as much done around the house as we can, cleaning up and getting ready for spring. And then, of course, there's still a ton of recruiting for me. I mean, the only thing's changed is we're not allowed off campus. But we're still making phone calls, FaceTiming kids, and trying to be as interactive as we can with those recruits.
How is recruiting different? Like, how do you even approach and do the normal work you do where you'd go places and meet kids and their families and see where they live and watch them play? You can't do any of that. How are you doing this? How are you and still feeling like you're getting the kids you want to get in on and still doing the evaluating that you want to do, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we actually saw everybody that we really wanted to see during their high school season. Now, there were a few that normally we get a chance to see here in April and May during the evaluation periods, and obviously we won't. But it's just a matter now of just continuing to do what we've been doing, and that's making phone calls. You know, you're burning up the phone line. You're trying to make sure that you know who is going to be the key players in each kid's recruiting. There's always somebody who they're going to count on the most, and that's what we have to do as coaches is figure out who those people are.
Jeff, when you see the NCAA giving, obviously I know you're not a spring sport, but they're giving spring sport athletes another opportunity to come back and compete. Just your quick thoughts on that, and does it relay or matter in your situation not being able to play in the NCAA tournament? Did they make the right, wrong decision there?
Well, I mean, it's really a tough choice. I mean, especially when you're talking winter sports, you're talking basketball. There were a lot of schools whose seasons were over. You know, we had played conference tournaments already. If you've got a below 500 record, your year is over. So how do you decipher of who you're going to come back and give an extra year to? Is it to everybody if you do women's basketball and men's basketball, or only those schools that were possibly going to make postseason? So I think because you played out so much of the year, it was really a tough call in the terms of your winter sports, your basketballs per se. You know, for the spring sports, I completely understand. I mean, it's a lot of kids that just got started playing in their season. A lot was still to play for. So I can understand that. And now I think it's just a matter of trying to figure out myself, you know, who does this really impact? Is it just 1 year's kids, or is it all four? And I'm trying to figure all that out. Now, it doesn't affect me per se, so I don't have as big of a, you know, a dog in the fight. But for us, it's more so just trying to make sure we continue to stay our head down, recruiting, you know, contact with our returning players, making sure that, you know, that they're in a good spot.
What's the communication like on kind of a daily basis, or a regular basis at least, with Vince, and sort of what's expected of you guys, what's allowed for you, you know, and that sort of thing?
Well, our compliance staff is doing a great job. They're still getting us the information that we need, what we're allowed to do in terms of FaceTime and different interactive ways to recruit. And then for us as a staff, you know, we've just been doing a good job of trying to make sure we continue with our relationships that we have with our current players. We use Zoom. It's a great, you know, group chat, you know, to have on your computer. So we have our group meetings, where we can at least see everybody's face, they can see ours, and we can keep up to date with what's going on.
Even your national players, how big of a challenge is that?
You know what? It's not as hard as you would think. We actually had Norika's back home in Japan, and we actually had a Zoom group meeting the other night at 8:30, which is 9:30 in the morning her time. So we've been able to stay in contact with everybody. They've all been a part of our meetings, and it's gone really well.
Talking with Jeff Walls here on The Drive on 9:30 The Bell. All right, Jeff, the news of today, at least, you will get back for next season. And this is something I think people are not particularly used to with women's basketball, but you've done a good job here. So you don't have to worry, or you do have to worry about draft possibilities. Dana Evans was at least considering, announced today she's going to come back for next season. Obviously, how excited are you for that? How do you feel about next year's team, knowing what you know right now, at least?
Yeah, you know what? We're really excited for next year's squad. It's a very talented group. We've got some experience. We've got some youth. A little bit of everything, and I'm looking forward to seeing what we're going to be able to do. And then, you know, my biggest challenge to all of our returning players: everybody's in the same boat right now. You know, we can't open up our gym. We're not allowed to do individual workouts. So now it's a matter of how creative can you be? How creative can you be to get outside, possibly to work out your ball handling on the street? You know, they've taken rims down, so it's not like you can just go out and go someplace and shoot now. But there's a lot of your game that you can still work on. And I've challenged our kids. I'm like, are we going to be that team that uses this as an excuse? Well, I wasn't able to get in the gym for 2 months. Or are we going to be the ones that, hey, figured out a way to get better at other areas of our game, so then when we are able to get back in the gym, we might be further along with our ball handling so we can spend more time with our shooting?
I couldn't imagine not being able to get in a gym right now and play pickup games or work out. I mean, your players are going to be doing a ton of two-ball dribbling. Like, do you think this is going to be a tough time for your players to get a lot better during the summer? This is supposed to be player development time.
Well, it is. But you know what, Luke? The great thing about this, too, is everybody talks about kids being burnout. You know, and now everybody's kind of being forced to take a little bit of a break from their sports, say basketball. And maybe this actually is not going to be a bad thing if you approach it in the correct manner. So we're trying to spin this in some ways and saying, hey, this is that little break everybody wants. Now make sure you're doing everything else so when you're ready to get back at it and we're allowed, we're able to go full speed ahead.
How about the new players? Obviously, you signed a very good recruiting class this season, but you probably don't even know right now when you might even get a chance to see them or work with them sort of hands-on. How far behind does the eight ball, does this sort of put them, not being able to perhaps do some of the early stuff, early summer stuff that players would normally do when they get here?
Well, I mean, that's the one part that's still going to be an unknown. Is, you know, when are we going to be able to get them on campus? What is that going to look like? You know, so there's a lot that's not going to be known for a while, but hopefully everybody will do what they're being asked to do and try to keep your so social distancing and, you know, limit the number of contacts you have so we can get this virus flattened out, this curve flattened out, and hopefully get back to what we're all used to as a normal life.
Coach, you got a few seniors on your roster that obviously season got cut a little short, but how much contact do you have with the girls who just got finished up and kind of what's next for them? Obviously, we know about Dana Evans today, but the other seniors.
Oh, yeah, no, we're still in contact with them. We're getting prepared for a draft here coming up. They're still going to have the WNBA draft here April 17th. So trying to do everything that we can to make sure that they're ready for that. You know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's not the most ideal situation, especially when you look at kind of your draft is April 17th, and then as soon as we're able to start doing things again, they're going to be out there and be active. But, you know, this kind of puts you behind the eight ball a little bit in the terms of trying to stay in shape and then continuing trying to improve for once you know where you're going to be drafted. And then when camp is, how are you going to be able to compete with the returners?
Jeff, take us back to that moment basically where you find out, hey, there's not going to be an NCAA tournament. You know, we had Chris Mack on Friday, and he said one of the more disappointing things for him was not being able to be the guy that told his players about this because it all happened so fast and everyone kind of found out on social media as it was happening, that sort of thing. What was the process like for sort of breaking the news to the team? Did you get to do that, and what were some of the reactions kind of right in the moment there?
Well, I was fortunate that I actually was able to tell our players. Now, a lot of them had already found out, obviously, like you just said, on social media. But at least I was able to get them back into my office. You know, we sat down and talked about it and just talked about, you know, let's not be that one team that's going to sit here and talk about the what ifs. And let's celebrate what we were able to get accomplished. And, you know, when we talked about that as staff and as players, then you were able to talk about the great things that took place throughout the year. And, you know, and I always say it, I've been a part of a team as an assistant coach that won a national championship. And you can remember some of the games, but you remember the moments that you spent with each other on road trips and going out to eat and in the hotel. So I just talked to our kids about, let's make sure you enjoy those moments, relive those. Don't sit here and always talk about the six games we possibly could have had that we didn't get ahead.
Well, Coach, did you get the opportunity to talk to Dana Evans before she kind of put this decision out there and say, you know, because of what you guys are returning, that you put down some goals, or did you guys talk about what next year might look like or what you hope to achieve?
No, we really didn't. We just sat there, and I talked with her and her dad just about we're here to support our student athletes and what's best for them, whatever they feel is best for them. That's what we want to help them achieve. And Dana, because of her age, you know, there's different requirements in women's basketball. You either have to be 4 years removed from high school, you have to graduate, or you've got to be turning a 22 within that senior year. And those are the only ways that you can come out early. So it's not like you can play 2 years and then leave. And Dana just happened to fit in that criteria. So she could have come out if she wanted. But I think there's so much in the unknown right now with, you know, is there going to be a league? If there is, how are they going to do it? And then there's a lot still out there that's unknown about the international game, finding pro jobs in Europe. So I think for her and her family, I think they just sat down and decided this was probably the best thing for her, was to come back and finish up and get her degree and then play her senior year. And she knows we have a chance to have a special year again, and she has a chance to be a very big part of that.
Yeah, I think one of the best things that's happened here with people being forced to work at home, things like this, I think everyone is totally desensitized to the screaming kid in the background. Like, we all do this now. So we totally, no judgment here. I've done it myself more than once. You get back to what you got to do there, buddy. We appreciate it. Thank you for making time for us.
I've got a weed eater in my hand, and I'm just waiting for us to finish up to get back to weed eating while the kids are playing.
All right. Appreciate it, Jeff. Stay safe.
I appreciate it, guys.
There you go. Jeff Walls, good stuff from him. Always about to do something when we get him, isn't he?
Of course. Yeah, no, I mean, that we shouldn't even be surprised by that. But what – I mean, he had some great answers in there. What adversity he and his team have kind of been through lately, and just to kind of worry about what's up next, and you can't control what happened to you, only how you react to it. Just a lot of different situations there. He's impressive, man. He's a special guy, and I think that probably made the decision for Dana Evans and her family a lot easier, knowing, you know, this guy's going to be the one leading the program.
Yeah, and I did appreciate, by the way, that, you know, not – him kind of going out of his way to explicitly say, you know, to the players, and I think this works for sports, period. Don't let the fact that you didn't get to play the NCAA tournament sort of make you forget about all of these things that you'll actually will care about more in the long run than any of the games. You know, and that's, you know, like the people that you've been involved with, the things that you sort of struggled through together, you know, right, all of these moments that nobody but you and your other teammates will see, you know, that sort of thing. I like a healthy, fresh perspective like that.
Yeah, I love that. You know, we've talked about this a million times, about the tournament experience and how it was a lot of fun and very memorable, obviously. But I think he's right. You know, the things that I do remember most about being at the University of Louisville is just all the interactions with your team, all the ups and downs through kind of the life of your experience, not, you know, one game or one tournament.
81-50-93-9, that's the number if you'd like to get in here. 38-31-93-9 for the UPS jobs text line. If you want to hit us up that way, you can as well. Appreciate
Mark, you believe him, by the way?
Which part?
You believe that he and Dana Evans had a conversation about her returning to school and they didn't talk about what they can do?
No.
They had to have sat there and been like, I mean, if it were me, I would have put it in my little note. I guess that's how kids do it now, like the right. Social gram, yeah, Instagram note or whatever. I said social gram. Now I'm feeling really
you sound like Bill Belichick.
Media. Yeah, right.
Book face.
But just that I'm coming back to school to win a national championship. I mean, that's got to be front of mind. They may not want to put that out there, but I can't imagine two competitors like that having said, you know, this got taken from you. Let's go get it next year.
Yeah, I would imagine, Luke, in addition to what obviously will help Dana as a player, the fact that they're going to be extremely good certainly didn't hurt the cause of getting her to come back.
Yeah, I think so, too. And then it's also a great point. You know, the women's game is just in a little bit different spot in terms of the professional game, where there's still a lot of opportunity in playing kind of two seasons, one being overseas. And he makes a good point. Right now, your opportunities to go work on those contracts is a little down this year.
Well, and that's one of those things that's relevant to the women's game in particular, the WNBA, although it's about to get better with the new CBA. You know, a lot of the women, even though like the premier players in that league, still have to play somewhere else too, you know, in order to make a living. And the ability to do that and like the option for that to be out there, not nearly as much of an automatic, you know, going forward as it has been up to now. And so it kind of would make sense, like he said, for Dan to come back, finish your degree, possibly win a title, you know, bank another year. You and I have talked about this, Luke, so many times. Banking, you know, another year where you just sort of build up goodwill in this community where you probably will stay, you know, for the rest of your life. And it's hard to put a value on that.
Yeah, I mean, you're telling me I'm not from here. I've already, you know, bought a house, sold a house, moved in, got married. You know, I'm a Louisville guy forever now. I understand kind of what this community can do and what playing basketball here can do, especially if you represent yourself the right way, the way I think Dana Evans has through her career. I mean, this is, in my opinion, one of the best places to live in the country, so I see why people stay.
All right, let's take a break here, and we will come back. Luke, I want to turn our attention back to the documentary last night, the scheme. And one, to me, extremely glaring omission from that last night that, to me, it almost ruins the thing that it wasn't in there. I want to talk about that. Take your calls, your texts on the other side. Here.
Welcome back to The Drive. Presented by Fitness Market, right here on 93.9 The Ville. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Luke Hancock.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Luke Hancock here on a Wednesday. Appreciate Jeff Walls making time for us in between weed eating and playing Sorry. That was a quality, by the way, deep dive pull for board games there. Sorry, I haven't played Sorry in decades.
Good for you. Your kids haven't gotten into that one yet, though? I'm kind of shocked.
Haven't done that one.
Sorry's the easy one, right? It's just like...
Yeah. Shoots and Ladders really or Candyland, probably the easiest.
Yeah.
But Sorry's right there.
I like Risk.
Well, obviously, Risk is fantastic, but not for a 8, 4, and 2-year-old.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
They're not really big on strategy, first of all.
Like every turn, you're trying to take out the other continent.
Yeah, they're not really big on that. They don't really have a frame of mind to make Risk fun just yet there, Patty Ice. But we appreciate Jeff Walls making time for us here, keeping us updated on how he is doing, how he's handling all of this, and, of course, the good news that he's once again, I think, going to be loaded for next season. We won't have the conversation with him in the preseason about who's the alpha for this year. I think you're going to know going into this year. 81-50.
I just can't imagine how
– good.
I can't imagine how incredibly intense those practices are going to be. Just so much talent.
Well, again, like they're going to bring in two more McDonald's All-Americans and a redshirting one now on top of what's been going on now.
How many is that total on the roster?
Five, maybe?
I think I was going to say five. That's pretty incredible.
I'm pretty sure it's five. So it's going to be really wild. Like you said, practices and the expectations. I mean, next year is going to be as good of a chance as ever. For Jeff Walls to win a national championship. So if you want to weigh in on that, you can. We have been talking about last night The Scheme, the HBO documentary, 2 hours on Christian Dawkins that sort of shed some light on the fact that the state and the FBI in particular, they were out to get – they had an end in mind. They began with the end in mind. And to me, I think it clouds a lot of what I think we thought they were going to accomplish when this first was announced. And that's it, you know, sort of bring down all of the dirtiness in college basketball. That was never going to happen, Luke. They had aims on getting some high-profile coaching scalps, and that's it.
Yeah, it's disappointing, really. I mean, in every regard, you know, they didn't really get anybody except Rick Pitino for a little while, and they seem to have really just done head-scratching things in terms of just stopping pursuing real the real issues. I didn't think they attacked what we thought they would, and ended up being just a 24-year-old at the center of this, controlling so many things. I mean, could you imagine being in that hotel room when they bust in and put machine guns in your face, and you're talking to who was Jeff's partner, the female Jill, I think?
Yeah.
You're sitting there talking to Jill. She tells you she's an FBI agent. They bust in with machine guns pointed at you. You're the epicenter of this entire FBI investigation and how they're going to bring down all these major basketball schools. I mean, what must have been going through that young man's head?
Yeah, it's the flip side of, you know, wanting to be seen as an influential person. You'd be like, well, okay, you are.
Yeah.
And I
should not have done that.
No, and I think that's a lot of what Christian Dawkins, I think, said a lot of things that weren't true, that were captured on wires and that sort of thing, because he was interested primarily in being seen as kind of an influential person, you know, that could move players and move coaches and move guys. And I think that showed in this, but then there's the responsibility that comes with that. And of course, he was in the crosshairs of the FBI from the get-go.
Yeah, it was really good to kind of get his perspective and where he was coming from. And it just makes it – do you not get the sense that documentary made it seem even more small time than it was? Like, I thought what they finally got to made it feel small time. But having gone back and looking at who Christian Dawkins really is and getting some background and kind of his real involvement in all this, it makes it seem so small potatoes, doesn't it?
Luke, I think that's a good point, and it kind of goes along the same lines of, like, with everything being so kind of cut and dried right now, everything being so bottom line right now, just survival, economic survival or actual survival, physical survival through this, the virus and people losing their jobs and all that. You know, what happened last night in that documentary, I never really got the sense, like, that anyone was really being wronged at all.
Yeah, I mean, who's the real victim in this? It's like both sides trying to really find somebody to pin down. I mean, it seems all for naught.
Yeah, they didn't accomplish anything, which again goes back to the, look, we have your playbook and tip of the iceberg discussion. Like, none of that was really true. But look, watching that thing last night, knowing what we know now, we've gone through all of the trials of the various people that have been involved in that sort of thing. To me, the number one thing that stuck out about that documentary, and it bothered me, to sort of shoehorn in Katina Powell references and that sort of thing, with, you know, reputation of Louisville, all that sort of thing. You're talking about buying players, Adidas and its guys paying for guys. You have TJ Gasnola, who turned state's evidence. He became a cooperating witness. He testified against the people involved in things that have gone on in multiple places. You have a notice of allegations against the University of Kansas, KU, Bill Self, right, and everything that went on there. And Luke, there was one singular mention of Kansas in the documentary, and it was when they showed the graph of how much shoe companies pay some of their most expensive clients. And Kansas was on the graph with Adidas, and Louisville was on there too, because they have a great deal with Adidas, which we know all about. But there was not one single reference to Bill Self, Kansas, TJ Gasnola. There was no references to TJ Gasnola at all. And again, that dude turned state's evidence. And nothing about Silvio D'Souza, who was a player on this year's team that would have competed for a national championship, and a guy that was the unseemliest of all player purchases. They paid back somebody else's payment to get him from Maryland to Kansas.
Right. The players that were named and involved are obviously big name players, and they stem across multiple shoe companies, multiple schools. But I really thought you were going to have a definitive jaw dropping moment. And I think that was lacking, especially in the end when they were starting to really, turn over some serious evidence. The best part, like I said, was the clip Patty Ice played.
Which one?
The Will Wade when Miller's talking about Will Wade. That was the most intense part of the movie. Like, what are these guys about to say and incriminate themselves with on this wiretap right after you find out Christian Dawkins' phone rings and their phone rings? At the same time, like, they have every conversation he's had for months and months and months. I expected jaw-dropping, like, he really just said, send the money to this high school or to this person or to something. And yes, they talk numbers. Yes, I think it incriminates both those guys. The players that we heard, you kind of know those guys and know that they were wrapped up in something. I think the fact that Nasir Little had a few choices and, you know, wound up going to someone not mentioned as being a bidding participant means he probably got paid more to go there. And you just didn't, you didn't get enough from this, in my opinion. C minus.
But in particular, look, again, how is that? If you're talking about you want scalps, you want big names.
Where are they at?
You want, well, you want unseemly behavior and that sort of thing. I mean, you've got a guy that cooperated with the government in TJ Gasnola. And he and Kansas are never brought up anywhere in the entire documentary. But Rick Pitino and Katina Powell somehow make their way in there.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. You wonder how they kind of got away with that. Is, you know, did TJ – I don't know. That's all – is very shady to me, and it seems like the school, as Louisville, in my opinion, has kind of stepped away from the forefront of this entire thing, not just this documentary, but since it's really happened. I thought Kansas has kind of stepped in as that's the one they're going to really go try and nail, and they weren't even mentioned. Seems crazy.
It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Jay Wright was just on Get Up here, and he looks like he hasn't shaved in several weeks. I would imagine many of these coaches taking advantage of the fact that they don't really have to go out in public at all.
Everybody is, bro.
Like, everybody. I got a mustache right now, Mark.
Same here, Luke. I've never grown out my mustache. We talked about this with Blakenbaker on Monday. I don't even look like the same human being right now, dude. I got long, run-out hair. I'm not clean cut. I don't look like you anymore. Like, I look terrible.
I've been office and house, so I'm the same way. I guess the people I work with are probably like, you need to clean yourself up. But I'm just not meeting with clients right now.
I only leave my house to come here just so that you guys can connect remotely so we can both be on the show. Like, that's literally the only reason that I do it.
Work and house means I've been spending a lot of time at work.
I hear you. 8150-939, that's the number if you'd like to get in here. So to me, look, that was the biggest disappointment in all of this. It's just no mention of Kansas, just because of all the cases, you had someone that actually did participate and cooperate with the government. You have a notice of allegations, like the NCAA has already done their work on it and has their accusations that they are making. You have a coach who has a national championship, who had the number one team in the country this season. And the most, to me, it's what happened with Silvio D'Souza is a million times more unseemly than what happened with Brian Bowen. Because you're talking about buying out a kid's bribery payment to go to an Under Armour school so that you can get him to go to the Adidas school and them knowing about it.
How incredible is that? It's like we're talking amateur athletes, right? You've got to buy out his already illegal payment from another shoe company. It just seems incredible. And then I still think the audacity for Kansas to clear this kid and play him is absolutely incredible.
It's ballsy. I don't think there's any question about that. It's pretty ballsy. And to pull out a whole season. And, of course, the irony is that we talked about this yesterday, Luke, Kansas trying to fire David Beatty, their former football coach, for cause for having, you know, analysts signaling in plays and stuff on the sideline for football, but then you're going to not only keep but go to bat for Bill Self with all of this. You're telling.
You think they're a basketball school?
Yeah, right. I mean, the only thing we're missing here in this case, at least, is you remember when Gordon Gee was the president at Ohio State. This is now forever ago, but you know, sort of famously made the joke, "No, I'm not going to fire Jim Tressel. I hope he doesn't fire me."
Yeah,
That's. That's how Jeff Long looks about Bill Self through all this.
He really does. What a good reference you just pulled right there. It's like, you know, I've always said LeBron might as well be player, coach, owner. And this is the same type of situation where the real power is, you know, you when these guys are just making so much money, they're figureheads, they run so much of that program, and you start to think the coach is bigger than the basketball program. What are you supposed to do? You know, there's a few places around the country where those guys are going to retire there. And if you try and get rid of them, it's kind of, you know, the only one I can really think of is probably Bowden at Florida State, where you had a huge name like that felt like he was untouchable, and finally they pushed him out.
A texter asked this question, Luke. So how do you think Louisville turned out looking in the documentary last night? I felt like they said some damning things. Do you think it will continue to hurt U of L? I think it will, until they hear from the NCAA, it's just going to linger out there. I think that part will hurt U of L. But if you watch that documentary, there was the embarrassing, you know, sort of long, drawn-out reference to the Katina Powell stuff, which is obnoxious, but it's just it's part of the game at this point. But if you watch that documentary, there were a lot of coaches, assistant coaches and head coaches both, and a lot of people explicitly involved in a lot of stuff, and there wasn't anything. There was no reference to Jordan Fair, no reference to Kenny Johnson, nothing, no wiretap audio of Rick Pitino, no text messages, no nothing from anyone at Louisville doing anything. So from that perspective, if you ask me, nobody at Louisville did anything in that documentary last night.
That's what I walked away saying. You know, I was texting with Coach Pitino today, and I mean, they say a lot of things that as a Louisville fan, you don't really want to hear.
Right.
But I didn't think there was anything in the documentary where I was like, oh, no. You know, the bad looks were just things you're going to have to stomach for a little while until people stop talking about them. You know, things that schools have had for decades. And, you know, eventually we're going to move on. But I didn't think there was anything new. Like I said before, I thought LSU and Will Wade. And I thought Miller and Arizona. It seems so cut and dry that those schools are going to have to do something with those coaches and investigate and figure out what was going on, and that there's no way they'd be allowed to continue coaching. You know, they don't have any of that on Rick Pitino.
No, they don't have anything even close to that on Rick Pitino. No one even alleged that he participated in any way. Now,
that he knew anything. Well, some people, I guess, allege that he had to have known, but Nobody has a firm stance on that.
Well, I mean, look, if there's certainly nothing rising to the level of what you had there with the audio of Sean Miller and Will Wade, nothing even close to that for Rick Pitino, really, or anybody at Louisville. In fact, I think you sort of the more if you could get like a global collection of everything everyone's had to say about what happened with Brian Bowen, like it was pretty obvious. Like that was just some terrible, terrible luck for Louisville that they had a spot open and that these guys who were trying to drive Brian Bowen somewhere, picked Louisville.
Yeah, it just seems like the most unfortunate way for it all to go down for Louisville and just bad timing to have something else there. Honestly, you know, the way I see it, it's just unfortunate. You know, I don't necessarily think, based on that documentary, certainly don't think that Coach P knew what was going on. It just seems like wrong place at the wrong time, and the fact that they were doing all this and had such a connection to Brian Bowen. I mean, Christian Dawkins said he knew him from the middle school days. Louisville didn't know about him till what, a week before he signed?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it hadn't really been on anybody's, you know, radar or anything, you know, like that to be, you know, possibly somebody that would come to Louisville. It's also, you know, just I know you know Rick Pitino better even than I do, but the idea that he would somehow let himself be beholden to a 24-year-old.
There's no big time in Rick Pitino. I don't care how old you are, but this young whippersnapper would not have been talking or acting the same way as he did on the phone with Coach Miller. I can promise you that.
Exactly. And like that, to me, I think I can understand why Christian Dawkins would want to look that way and certainly portray himself to others as somebody with that kind of influence. But I think you and I, again, both knowing Rick Pitino and the kind of person that he is, that was not the reality.
No. I mean, you know, Christian Dawkins, I give him some credit. He was a manager for two guys, Alfred Payton and Rodney Hood, two guys I played against that were very, very talented. And represented them in at least some capacity in the draft when he was 20 years old. He was just a few years older than those guys. And so the guy was a salesman. I think the guy wanted to be big time. And he was in a circle where, you know, think about it. If Bill Self needs you, if Rick Pitino needs you, if Miller and Wade and all these coaches need you, you feel pretty big. It's got to be a position of power and one where he could have, I'm sure, profited really well.
Yeah, there's some security there and some influence there, you know, going forward there. And, of course, I think maybe the biggest disappointment is something we forget about, Lucas. I feel like we never got anything out of the raid of Andy Miller's offices and all of that. You know, he was obviously a very big target kind of early on, and we never heard a thing about him, about what came out of it, nothing.
Yeah, I know Andy Miller is one of the, like, biggest agents ever for basketball names. And I would have expected, if you were really going to go drop college basketball and this guy was this crooked, he was doing so many of these deals that they would have rolled out file cabinets that would have incriminated so many people. I thought that was going to be the tip of the iceberg. That was what gave the feds, the FBI, the playbook, would be going to Andy Miller and getting all the information he has and looking through his phones and looking through his records. And you're right, to come up with nothing there. You know, you'd at least think he was keeping a ledger about where money was going if they were paying kids before they got to the draft and before they got paid. I mean, you'd have to think he knew where that money was supposed to be somehow. I mean, it's written in notes in his phone or something.
Text into the UPS Shops text line, quote from the director of the scheme in an interview, and here's what he said, and quote, "And it also surprised me, to be quite frank, that Christian continually claimed that he didn't think that Rick Pitino knew anything. I struggled with that for a long time," end quote there. And the texter says, "The director didn't want Pitino to be innocent." I mean, look, I think Rick, in this case at least, was, in terms of the documentary and obviously this case, he was a very big fish. He makes headlines more than anybody else because he's just such an outsized person. And he was a target for that reason.
They want loud. They want noise. You know, I talked about it earlier. Southern District of New York, they do not want quiet cases. And with Rick Pitino, it wasn't going to be. And again, I think the documentary goes out of its way to try and make Louisville look bad, and whatever, that's just something that we'll live with. I mean, it's just a documentary, but I didn't think there was near as much to talk about in Louisville's case besides Brian Bowen as an individual and where he committed to go to school as I thought there would be. I really thought we were going to have some drop of the hammer. You know, a text message, a Jordan Fair conversation or something, and I just didn't see it.
Yeah, and I mean, we're at the end of this thing now. There's nothing else that's really going to come out, and if that's the case, I think it's pretty obvious, Luke, that being the case, that's why Rick Pitino's coaching at Iona now, because no one's really afraid of any other shoes dropping.
I mean, he's got to feel vindicated from this, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And if full disclosure to everybody listening, we reached out to Rick just to see if he wanted to come on, just to kind of gloat, quite frankly, because I feel like some of the vindication he's been looking for is in something like this, where there's very obviously coaches involved in this thing, and he ain't one of them. And I think there's no coincidence that he's back involved in this documentary or in this scheme, really. At all. Cody called in here. Let's get him in here before we hit 5 o'clock and beers with Andy Beshear, like we do every day. Cody, thanks for waiting, buddy. Welcome into the drive on Nathaniel. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Yeah, I didn't watch the documentary because, well, I just don't feel like paying for another subscription for HBO. But you know, it just seems like, what's the point? You know, like if the whole point of this is to bring down the dirtiness of college basketball, but like it just seemed like the documentary mainly focused on Louisville shadiness, and there really wasn't even a point to that because it just seems like Rick Pitino's more vindicated now than ever. It's like, what's the point? Why aren't you targeting these schools that coaches still have the jobs? You know, like Will Wade should be. Here's the thing. The reason why the media is covering Louisville and Kansas is because we actually matter in the world of basketball in general. It's like LSU. I've been saying this for a while. LSU is not going to fire Will Wade unless like they are absolutely forced to, which, I mean, they should have fired him already. But look at it this way. Like they're having the most success in basketball that they've had in years. And it's like Louisville and Kansas, we can afford to hire new coaches and get really good coaches. I mean, LSU, they're just like, man, like we finally got a good basketball coach. It's like, we're not going to fire this guy unless we're absolutely forced to do so. And, you know, it's just like, what's the point of all this? I mean, you guys are trying to make us look bad, and, you know, it doesn't really look like we were as involved. The only like little road that we got to get over is Kenny Johnson paying Brian Bowen's dad $1,200 for rent. But all Kenny Johnson has to do is just say no, and he's still got a job in college basketball. So it's like, is there really any dirt on us? I mean, Kansas is going to get absolutely bodied by the NCAA when this is all said and done. And the media is not covering it for some reason, but, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Like, Kansas was directly involved. They're going to get hammered. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like it's going to happen. And, you know, we can hold our heads up high knowing that we actually got a classy, good coach that's not involved in any of this. And I'm kind of all over the place because this whole FBI crap is just, it's just getting ridiculous at this point. Like, they were flexing their muscles, like, we got your playbook. But really, the only thing that's changed is that we hired a new basketball coach, and that's it. Every other school that was involved in this, every coach still has a job. And it's like, I don't see the pressure from the NCAA to get rid of these coaches. I don't see any of it. So it's just, I really don't care at this point. I'm just focused on next year's team and hoping that we have a really good season and hoping that we get these grad transfers. I just don't care at this point. Do you know what I mean? Like, am I wrong for saying that?
No, I listen, you know, don't care. Appreciate the call, Cody. I think there's fatigue. And I think alongside the fatigue, I think there is just an anxiousness. Can we just get to the end already? NCAA, can you please just say what you're going to say so we can face that and then move on? Like, people are just tired of the mental and emotional tax that comes with it just sort of hanging out there.
No question. And I mentioned that earlier. That was one of my first questions. When we started talking about this, was I wonder what the appeal was. I wonder what the appetite for this documentary was, because on one hand, we said this earlier, sports not going on, I felt like this would be a blockbuster. Or are people like Cody? I just don't care anymore. They don't seem to have the firepower. Let's just get over. Let's get past it. And, you know, I wonder if this got the you know, flash in the pan, the big bang effect that they expected.
Corey Evans with Rivals tweeting, by the way, that the NCAA just extended kind of this recruiting dead period where no one's allowed to travel and so, you know, be in person, that sort of thing, 45 days. And so you're going to, Luke, this is the grad transfers and the transfers, they're going to be making sight unseen decisions unless they've taken visits in the past. That's just the world that we are in.
Wow. I just, you know, I think about my experience transferring. I had already been on a visit when I came to Louisville. I had two more visits scheduled, and just those one-on-one relationships and conversations, and you just see who you're going to be able to gravitate towards when you get to fully immerse yourself in what a school is all about. And I just can't imagine how tough of a decision that would be. So many things on campus swayed my decision.
Right. I think it's impossible to overstate how important all that sort of thing is, and no one's going to get it to be able to even do that. The only option I think you'll have is some guys who took visits before may be able to recall, but that's not even close to the same thing. All right, let's take a break here, and when we come back, obviously it'll be 5 o'clock. It'll be time for Andy Beshear with his daily update as we're entering April. And the really the part that's going to feel depressing for a short while, at least. Hopefully we will emerge from this on the other side with some vision for where this is going and when it might be over. But we'll get through it day by day together. Andy Beshear at 5 o'clock on the other side here on The Drive on 910.